I'm Kevin.
And I'm Stephanie.
And during our marriage, we have dealt with an electrocution, a brain tumor, brain surgery.
Then doctors telling us that children were not in our future, followed by miscarriage, and then Kevin's cancer diagnosis.
However, today, we live a life completely healed and restored with three healthy children who doctors said were not possible. And we're here to tell stories that inspire, give hope, and brighten your day. Welcome to
Tell Us a Good Story.
This episode is being presented to you by Storyside Church, where your story matters. At Storyside Church, they believe God always writes a good story.
You can join them for church online each Sunday morning on their Facebook page or watch their entire library of prior services on their YouTube channel, Storyside Church.
All right, Steph.
Are you freaking out right now? You have been wanting to talk to him for so long.
We're very excited about this.
You're so calm right now. You're like, I'm so excited. No, you're freaking out about this.
Well, friends, our next guest is a husband, father, and author. He is a 15-time best-selling author, including the books The Energy Bus, The Carpenter, and Training Camp. And he is considered to be one of the top three leadership authors and speakers in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Tell Us a Good Story, Mr. John Gordon.
John Gordon!
What a great intro.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Excited, John.
Thank you for saying yes to us, sir. We're excited to talk to you. And first off, John, you went to Cornell, very prestigious Ivy League school in Ithaca, New York. Steph and I and our family are actually going to Ithaca next weekend for about 4 days. First time we've ever gone there with some friends. So before we go, is there a John Gordon statue somewhere? Is there a John Gordon sign that we need to get a family photo in from?
Yes.
What is in Ithaca, New York that we should go see?
Not at all. There is no statue in me whatsoever. And I often think, you know, as a lacrosse player at Cornell, there's no way I'm in the Hall of Fame either. The only way I would make it there would be as a writer. So that's not happening. But Ithaca is really known for, you know, beautiful lakes and the gorges.
Yes.
And it's really beautiful, really nice. Great winery. So you're going to enjoy it. I'm just wondering why you're going there. Why are you going to Ithaca?
John, I feel the same way. Honestly, I feel the same way. Our best friends have wanted to take us for, like, I think ever since we were, like, newly married.
Yeah, he went to school at Cornell. And he just talked about the gorges there and the lakes.
Waterfalls.
And hopefully we can keep our six-year-old away from jumping off into some of this water.
It's the first time I've ever wanted to leash a child.
With our six-year-old?
Yes. I understand the leashes now for this situation.
Hold the child's hand for sure.
Yes.
But yeah, it is beautiful. It is majestic. I loved going there. The wintertime was rough, so it was not fun in the wintertime. It was so cold in college. That's why I moved to Florida after college. I'm like, I'm going to the warm weather and some sunshine.
I totally get that. I have a question for you. You are known for being so positive. Where did that positivity come from in your life? Did a situation happen, or you just mentally one day woke up and you're like, I'm done being all doom and gloom?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I'm not naturally positive. So this is my life's work. And yet I naturally go towards the negative. I grew up in a Jewish Italian family, a lot of food, a lot of guilt, a lot of wine, a lot of whining. When I started speaking, my dad said, I can't believe people actually pay you to speak. When you're a kid, we paid you to shut up. I mean, that's how it was for my house. But I gradually, you know, was dealing with more and more negativity, fear, anxiety, depression. And I lost my job during the dot-com crash. And my wife threatened to leave me during that time because I was being so negative, so miserable. I'm blaming her for why I had not lived up to my potential. And she said, if you don't change, we're over. So that was a huge wake-up call for me. And I wanted to change. I wanted to be a better husband. And that really got me into researching ways that I could be more positive. I began to study some new emerging ideas from positive psychology. This is all the way back in 2001. No one was talking about these ideas and concepts back then. And so I began practicing some ideas. I began taking a thank you walk every day. I began to celebrate my successes at night. I began to train my mind to be more positive. And I would take these daily walks and I would do this work day in and day out. And then I began writing a weekly positive tip on strategies I was doing. And I was sharing those now with others and benefiting them. And that led me to actually do this work as a writer and speaker. So it was actually out of my own challenges, my own struggles, that made me want to be more positive. And I think that's why I'm a good teacher, because I know what it's like to struggle, like so many do with negativity.
Yes.
And I know what it takes to become more positive. And here's the great news. We can all elevate our state of mind. We can all elevate our positivity. And it's not just a nice way to lead. It's not just something that's Pollyanna. You literally can elevate your mind and change the way you think. And the way you think changes everything. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is so important.
That is so, so good. Okay, okay, okay. You wrote one of your best known books is The Energy Bus. And you were just talking about how you were struggling. Well, John, this morning we had a daughter who's on the struggle bus. We needed her on the energy bus.
Yes, we did.
So as you were raising your kids and they went on the struggle bus, how did you elevate them?
Yes.
You know,
get them to think positively, speak positively. How did you train the kids to have that mindset, John?
You know, it's not easy. And we did struggle with it because my son would be more on the negative side like me. My daughter was generally more positive, but now she struggles at times. She's actually a speaker. And whenever she's on the road going to speak, she's always encountering some adversity,
right?
Some challenge. I'm telling you, this girl goes through the fire. And I told her, that's what you have to do as a speaker. You go through all these issues, all these challenges. The planes don't work. The mics don't work. The audiences are challenging at first. And it's like, do you really want to do this work? Are you really going to make a difference? Are you doing it for the right reason? So it will refine you. It will test you. And she's learning that now. So I'm encouraging her. I encourage my son a lot. I'm really a natural encourager. Mm-hmm. So even though I might not be positive myself at times, which, you know, again, I become more positive, I love to encourage others. So I would really encourage them. And then we did a practice where I would ask them their success of the day. I created a success journal. And every night we would talk about what went right that day. The one thing that they feel proud of, the one great accomplishment, the one great conversation, the one thing that made them smile. And every day you go to bed, a success. You wake up, a success. And so now you are looking for the successes in your life. And we know that what we look for, we find. What we focus on shows up more in our lives. So the more that we do this, it literally changes, again, the way our brain's wired and allows us to focus more on positivity versus the negativity. And you build more confidence as a result of that. So I think it's probably one of the best things I did as a dad was that I did a lot of things that were wrong along the way, like talking about the game too much after the game when they were
athletes.
I'm guilty of
that. Definitely made that mistake. I admit that. But I also did some things right, thankfully.
Yes. You have a beautiful family.
Yes.
When you look on Instagram,
you obviously did something right. Yes, you did.
Well, that's it. My wife gets all the credit for that.
Smart man, John. The good answer.
All right, Steph. I got a question for you. What's your favorite book of all time?
Obviously, You Met Her Where.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Bible.
Oh, oops.
What's your second favorite book of all time?
You Met Her Where?
A distant second.
Totally distant.
It's a pretty good book.
Sorry, God.
It's still a pretty good book. But we're so excited. Where can people get our book, honey?
Okay, I know this. Amazon.com.
Yes.
Barnes & Noble.
Yes. And?
And our website, KevinandSteph.com.
And what happens if they buy it off our website? What do they get?
An autograph from us.
Yes.
Who wouldn't want that?
So, listeners, if you've already read the book, thank you so much. We've had such good feedback. One thing that helps us, if you can give us a review on Amazon.com, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much, and thank you for listening. All right, John, for all of our guests, I like to give a list of fun facts to let listeners know what you've done, what you've accomplished, and Steph is not aware of any of these, okay? So you're going to see her genuine reaction to this. And if I'm off on any of this, John, please correct me, but this should spurn some fun stories. All right, Steph.
Okay.
Yep.
Fun fact number one, John has a pickleball court named after him. Most people have things named after them when they die. Not this guy. All right. So our friend Damon West, who we interviewed about a year and a half ago, built a pickleball court in his backyard and named it after John. So two-part question here, John. First off, how do you find out that you have a court named after you? Do you just show up to play and you're like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? And two, how do I get something named after me? Whether it's a court, a building, a baby, how does this work, John?
That is so funny that you said that. I don't have a statue named after me at Cornell, but I have a pickleball court named after me in Beaumont, Texas, at Damon's house.
Yes.
So Damon and I wrote The Coffee Bean together. And I came to him with the idea because Dabo Sweeney told me how Damon had just given a talk to Clemson and how he inspired the team with this coffee bean message. And once he said what a coffee bean was all about, I'm like, oh man, that needs to be a book. I had a vision for it right away because I had always been talking about the power is on the inside, not outside. And the coffee bean message is you have the power inside to transform your world on the outside. And so when Dabo told me that, I reached out to Damon. I said, hey, we should do a book. Damon said, you don't need me for that. You're John Gordon. You can do this on your own. I said, yeah, I know, but we're supposed to do it together. I just have this feeling that we are. And yes, I could have made a lot more money doing it on my own, but I gave Damon, you know, half the book, half the royalties, everything. And so he went forward with this concept, started giving a lot of talks, and now he's been crushing it as a speaker, as a writer. So this book really put him on the map and helped him build this new, great, amazing house.
Yes.
And so Kevin, the way you actually get a pickleball, you know, court named after you is you've got to give someone a book that they could write. And
that's it.
You got to help them make millions of dollars that they can then build a big house and then a pickleball court. And then they appreciate you. And here's what's great about Damon. He appreciates it so much and is thankful. He's not arrogant. And then he's done the most with it. And now he's impacting so many lives as well. So both of us are out there impacting tens of thousands of people every month, hundreds of thousands, if not more, every year. Mm-hmm. And we're just on a mission. So yeah, it was cool to have a pickleball court named after me. He reached out to me, said he was doing that. And I was thankful. I mean, I don't get jazzed by statues or stadiums, or if someone said we're gonna name this after you, it really wouldn't do a lot for me. To me, my legacy is I want to leave it in people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what matters most is the impact I have in people. That's what fires me up. Statues do not get me excited, but I am excited about playing on this pickleball court, even though I haven't yet. So I've got this pickleball court with my name on it and I have it. And I often think about his relatives or friends that come over like, why do you have a court named John Gordon pickleball court? What is that all about?
Well, I'm sure they probably know by now.
They for sure know.
The impact you had on his life.
So. It's funny and special. It's funny and special.
Yep.
All right, Steph. Next fun fact. John opened one of the very first Moe's Southwest Grill restaurants in the U.S. Yes.
I didn't know that.
And then eventually sold it to focus on writing and speaking. However, his wife said, but you're not good at writing and speaking. So, John, can you share the story of how you basically made a complete career change, right? But can you talk about what led to that, John? Because that's an incredible story.
Kevin, you have done your homework. I am really impressed with your background information. You should go work for the FBI. If you have it.
Well, thank you.
So I opened up the fifth Moe's in the entire country. We were the first Moe's in Florida. We had just moved to Jacksonville, Florida from Atlanta. It was when I lost that job during the dot-com crash. And I was crumbling, didn't know how I was going to pay the bills. And I had been in the restaurant business in Atlanta since I was 24 years old, got out of it at like 29, 30. We moved down to Jacksonville and I'm thinking, how am I going to pay the bills? How will I support my family? I'm almost bankrupt. I'm almost literally about to lose everything. And I said, let me get back in the restaurant business. I knew of the concept Moe's from Atlanta. I thought, okay, that's a great concept. I think it might work here. I second mortgaged my home. $20,000 in credit cards.
Mm.
And I opened up that first Moe's Southwest Grill in Jacksonville. And people were walking in the door and we were yelling, welcome to Moe's. And they walked out.
Really?
They thought we were saying we're closed.
Oh, no. So,
yeah, yeah. And so we would grab them and bring them back in. And then gradually, you know, we started to develop a following. I advertised on the radio with our first like amount of money we made. Wasn't even a profit, but it was like just a little bit extra money. And we put it into radio. And then all of a sudden things started to happen for us and we started to grow. It was a really special time in my life in terms of faith because I was so full of fear and I was praying a lot. And I just saw God work miracles to support me, my family, and not have us go under during that time because it was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
It was during that time that I knew I wanted to write and speak. And I knew that was my calling. So the goal was, make enough money with the restaurant to allow me to write and speak. So there I am wiping tables down every day. I've got my crew making the burritos. I'm talking to customers. I'm going out trying to build business with caterings, and we're flying the movie theater. My wife and I were doing this together. It's amazing what you'll do when your family's future is on the line. And I was just doing that over and over again, just trying to make it happen somehow, some way. I remember we made our first profit, eventually started to do better and better. And I said, okay, I now really want to try to write and speak and do this and go after this. And my first speaking engagement came when a woman was in the Moe's and I'm wiping tables down. I start talking to her. It turns out she's the managing partner of New York Life right near the Moe's. And I said, you know, I'm also a motivational speaker. I had yet to give one talk, but I was a motivational speaker. And she said, well, come speak to my company, my agents. I said, okay. I tried to get out of it because I got so nervous and scared. She said, no, you agreed to do this. We're ready for you. We are expecting you. I'm like, all right, fine. I went, I gave a talk on success is about the little things. And then talked about no energy vampires allowed.
Yes.
Because I thought I came up with that term. If I didn't come up with it, I popularized it. And then talked about that. And then from that moment on, I'm like, you know, I think I could do this. It went really well. I enjoyed it. They laughed. I was sharing information. I'm like, okay, I think I can do this. And gave about 80 free talks after that.
Wow.
And then that began my career as a writer and speaker, and I don't know, tens of thousands of talks and groups and organizations and speeches later, and 30 books, 16 bestsellers. It's wild to go back to that story, right? It's all about a story, as you say.
Yes.
And then knowing that that was where it all began, like wiping tables down, yep, talking to a customer. She thought I just worked there because I was like 30 years old. I looked like a kid wearing a t-shirt and shorts, wiping the table down, and just started talking to me. I said, well, I'm actually the owner here. And then I said, I'm a motivational speaker. And that led to that first gig. So after I sold the Moe's, I'm now focusing on writing and speaking. I knew this is what I truly wanted to do, and I had to let the Moe's go. This was 2005.
Okay.
So I had them for like 3-4 years. So now I sold several Moe's. I had opened up several and made some money, thankfully, enough to at least carry us as I was going to pursue this writing and speaking career full time. And my wife was like, what happens if it doesn't work? Like, you're not really a great speaker or writer. I said, there are no other options. There is no plan B.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so I knew I had to go for it. It's like burn the boats, right?
Yes. Yeah. Burn the ships.
Sell the Moe's. There's no going back. And this is where I'm going. I am going to focus on writing and speaking 100%. Well, I sell the Moe's and all of a sudden nothing's happening. No speaking.
Oh,
things dry up.
John.
I'm like in this wilderness, mm-hmm, and I'm praying and I'm coming to faith, like during that time, like, mm-hmm, really coming to faith and just turning to God and tuning into God. On my walks of prayer, I'm asking for guidance. I'm asking for help. Money's running out. Do I have to get a job? Should I just forget this dream? And the energy bus comes to me on this walk. Boom, just pops in my head, the idea. I have a vision for it. And I go right to my home office, which was upstairs. And I begin writing this book. And I wrote that book in 3.5 weeks. And it was magical. It was special. It was the most spiritual experience I've ever had in my life was writing that book, because literally the story was unfolding and it was like, mm-hmm, I was taking notes and just typing it. And as it was coming to me, so I thought I had something really special and magical, but then we sent it out to publishers. I was able to find an agent. So that was cool, but it was rejected by over 30 publishers. So I'm told, no. What's an energy bus? We don't get it. Doesn't make sense. It's about a guy who gets on the bus and meets Joy, the bus driver. It wasn't your traditional business book.
Mm-hmm.
It was a combination of like business and personal, and no one had ever really combined the two before. You had to be self-development and personal or business, not one that combined them. So those rejections really were scary. There were times I thought my dream was over, it wasn't going to happen, but I literally could not give up because I knew I had something special and I had written something special. And then I'll never forget, you know, John Wiley and Sons agreed to publish the book. And so now it's finally coming out 6 months later. And I asked a friend, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, pray. So I prayed for it to be a bestseller, and it came out and it was a bestseller in Korea. You have to be specific with your prayers. Huge hit in South Korea. No joke. But not one bookstore in the United States would carry the book. You're right. So I went on a 28-city tour, paid for myself, from city to city, sharing the message in the book. And I didn't have a huge following. So we were promoting it through local radio stations, emailing, you know, at the time, just people I knew in the area. We had 5 people in one city, 10 people in another, 20 in another. The most people we had were 100 people in Des Moines, Iowa. They thought Jeff Gordon was coming, the race car driver.
Not John Gordon.
Jeff Gordon. And that's why they showed up. True story. Like, people call me Jeff. I got home and I didn't know what the future held, but I knew that I had this vision and mission. And that was 2007 when the book came out. And here we are years later. And yes, as you said, the book has now sold over 3 million copies. Changed my life. People started to read it, started to share it, became something that people share with their companies, their mm-hmm. schools, their nonprofits, their teams, their families. It just really is some kind of book that everyone just shares. And it just continues to get more and more popular. Even now, more than last year, more than the year before. So it's been a really huge blessing and a huge change in my life. And I'm just so appreciative that I was the one that got a chance to steward and share that book with the world.
Okay, I have a question for you. Because listening to you speak, you're a man of faith. But it's been a low season for you when you were trying to get the book off the ground. You know, you're a bestseller in South Korea. You've already sold your Mohs. You're seeing 10 people, 5 people. Some people didn't even want to see you. They wanted to see Jeff. Where were you mentally? And then where was your faith in all of this?
Well, that was where I really learned real positivity.
Uh-huh.
Because I had written this story about a guy who has to overcome negativity, adversity, and challenges to define himself and ultimately create his future.
You had to
live it. That was me. I was literally living my own story that I had written, and I had to stay positive on this tour. I had to stay positive sharing the message. I had to remember it wasn't about me. Like, come on, John, you said it was about one person at a time. Make a difference one person at a time. Even if 6 people are there, make a difference one person at a time. And you know what's so cool? One event, there were 6 people. One of those people was Betty Palm. She was working for a company at the time. Years later, over 10 years later, she became president of Avon and remembered the impact I had on her at that talk and brought me in to speak to 6,000 people for a big event at Avon.
Wow.
So I look back on that, it was like, I was being taught to live the vision, live the mission, do it one person at a time, do it for the right reason. You learn humility, you learn character and resilience.
Yeah.
And to this day, I don't have a big head. I don't get too big for myself because I know the journey I've been on. I know what it took to get here. And I'm just so thankful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so thankful because I went through the grind and the fire, as I told my daughter, you will have to go through it. And I'm doing this for the right reasons. Even to this day, I make sure that I really focus on the message, making a difference, who I'm reaching, and make sure that every event I do, I bring my best.
Yeah.
It's like Joe DiMaggio said, there's always some kid seeing me for the first time. Mm. I owe him my best.
So John, we live here in Columbus, Ohio. So Steph, back in August of 2016, he's already laughing.
I'm laughing about Columbus because one of my less than stellar performances happened in Columbus, Ohio.
What?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Real quick, talk about a story. I go to speak to these educators, and right before I go on, they show a video of a young man who passed away from cancer, and he's sharing how teachers impacted him and his story. I'm a wreck.
Oh, I'm a wreck.
And they want me to then speak on the energy bus and about positivity and uplifting everyone.
It was the
worst timing, the worst message. And I usually rise above. Like, I've never not risen above. This was the only time I think in my thousands of speeches that I was just truly wrecked from that experience of seeing that young man. And then his parents were there. And so I was trying to like weave that, seeing his parents, seeing his son, and then back to the energy bus, but not be too positive about it. It was definitely one of the strangest moments of my life.
Oh,
and it happened
no.
in Columbus. But so when you said Columbus, but I did speak to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I really like them. Obviously, they didn't have a good season this year, but I really do like them a lot.
Yes. Okay, so another good thing happened in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, that's okay? Good. Yes, he has something positive to think about. Yes, he does have
something else positive to say here. Okay, his very first TED Talk was in Columbus, Ohio in August of 2016.
Uh-huh.
Here's what's crazy. We've talked to people who have done TED Talks mm-hmm. before. They practice this for months, rehearsing, practicing it, being on stage. John here was given a 2-hour notice. 2 hours. So can you share that story, how that happened, John? Because that's incredible.
If you find my TED Talk online, you'll know that it was very spontaneous because I actually share that in the talk about what happened. When I arrived, I had just spoken to the San Francisco 49ers during training camp, and I didn't get much sleep the night before. And I arrived in Columbus, and everyone's wearing these TED shirts, and they were picking me up. I'm like, what are you wearing the TED shirts for? Oh, we're having a TED event today. You speak tomorrow at the conference. We're using the same place to do our TED event. And then tomorrow is the educators conference. They said, one of our speakers didn't show up. Would you want to speak today? And I'm like, no, I am not prepared. This is a TED Talk. And I didn't get any sleep the night before. Right. And I spoke to the 49ers, and a bunch of the coaches and players wanted to talk to me and ask me questions. And I was giving advice. So again, I was talked
out. Uh-huh. If you like what you hear, please tell someone about us. As soon as this episode is over, go tell your spouse, your closest friend, a parent, a coworker, or share one of our posts on social media.
However, if you don't like what you're hearing, please do not.
Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anybody.
Just disregard this message.
Don't worry about
it. Forget about us.
Yep.
Go on with your merry day.
And to get more information about us or our entire catalog of episodes, be sure to check us out at kevinandsteph.com. Thank you for listening to Tell Us a Good Story.
All right, final fun fact here. John has now written 30 books, including 2 that will come out this year. I think one just did. The list includes 16 bestsellers. And I read a quote here from you, John, that says, each book I've written takes about 3 weeks. I give all the credit to God. He's the author. I'm the pen. So can you talk about your books that are coming out and that quote? Because that's
powerful.
That's very powerful.
I didn't even know that I could write or even write books like that until I wrote The Energy Bus. And again, I wrote that book in about 3.5 weeks, and it was divine inspiration. And then I was able to do it again with the No Complaining Rule. I wrote The Shark and the Goldfish on an airplane going to Las Vegas to speak.
Oh my gosh.
On my BlackBerry. I've written most books, 3.5 to 4 weeks is the latest. And I get the idea, I know what it's supposed to be. And then as I begin writing, it just begins to write itself. So I know I'm really not the author. I really give credit to the ultimate creator, the ultimate writer. And then I'm just trying to surrender and trust and be a conduit for what I'm meant to write. Really, when I'm probably happiest is when I'm writing. So to me, it's about writer first, then speaking. And I love telling stories. And I really believe we're meant to go through challenges and struggles to become who we're meant to become so that we can impact others. And when you live that way, it becomes a very powerful, magical story.
Well, listeners, for more information about John, you can go to his website, johngordon.com, for his books, his newsletter, his podcast, which now has, Steph, 383 episodes.
Amazing.
And his Facebook page is John Gordon Page. His Instagram is at johngordon11. And we will put links to that in our show notes on our website. So you can click on that and go right to those pages.
Perfect.
And that's J-O-N Gordon.
Yes.
Yes.
J-O-N. Yes. Thank you. Well, John, thank you so much for giving us your time here. You're amazing to talk to. Like you said, an amazing storyteller as well. So thank you for saying yes to us, John.
Thanks, John.
Well, thank you both for just doing an incredible podcast and doing all your research. You know, that separates you from all the other people doing these interviews. You've done your homework and you really get to know your people, and that makes it more fun. And then you bring out the stories, which is what it's all about. So you all have done an amazing job. I've done a lot of podcasts. You all are exceptional. So thanks for having me.
Shut up, Kevin! Oh, babe!
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
I appreciate that.
Babe, are you freaking out right now?
That's very kind.
That is
Thank you.
Amazing. Good job, babe. Thanks, John.
Kevin's awesome. Keep up the great work. So you did really an amazing job. Great job, Kevin.
Thank you.
Friends, thank you for listening to this episode of Tell Us a Good Story.
For additional content and longer episodes, you can go to our website at kevinandsteph.com or wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
And don't forget, you can catch us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. right here on the AM/FM 24/7 network. Thank you for listening to
Tell Us a Good Story.